From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, which is really becoming the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. It's based around this culture of love. And I would be remiss if I did not state that the Growth Factory, our venture capital firm, is a key part of the driving force. And so that's Growth Factory Ventures. And also, I'm supposed to mention on the show today, I don't know if you know, we have a co-working space sort of with suites and stuff right here in Rockland where we do our show. And we're coming up, we're going to have an empty space coming up. Somebody's leaving. Apparently, we thought it was like the Hotel California. Once you get in, you never leave. But apparently, someone had to leave. And so we are looking for a new tenant. I think it's like $500-$600 a month to start. If you're interested, hit me up or come find us. You know where to get me. But today on the show, we're going to do something different. This was something I decided to do somewhat reluctantly, but and I did it because I love this guy. Robbie Morin is the owner of Lux Powder Coat. He's been on the show before a while ago. He's a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization with me. And he hit me up the other day and he said, "Hey, I'm running for Congress. What do you think about me coming on the show?" And I was like, "Oh, Robbie, I try not to go politics on this show." Yeah. I try, like, everybody loves small business and puppies and entrepreneurs, but when we start talking politics, you can only please like half the people. The other half are like, not going to like you. So we talked about it a little bit, and we decided let's have one of those conversations that's more like just two buddies talking, which is probably what we all ought to do anyway, whether we're from the left or the right, or, you know, we like the Niners or we like the Raiders or whatever. We ought to just talk and have fun with it and move on. I'm always trying to be more solution oriented, focus on, I mean, I guess my perspective, and I'll let you talk in a second, Robbie, but my perspective comes from like a small business background. My mom and dad owned a small business. I became a small business guy. A couple of our businesses got a little bit bigger and maybe called medium-sized businesses, had a couple of exits. And, you know, now I'm helping companies start businesses here. And my perspective is this is really a great place to start a business in California. We, you know, it's the startup hotbed. And, you know, a lot of it's in the Silicon Valley and the Bay Area. But even Sacramento's becoming a better place to start a business. But from a realistic perspective, bigger businesses are beginning to leave the state. High net worth individuals, even some of my buddies, are starting to leave, and there's reasons for all that. So you are also a business person. You have a small business perspective, but yet you're running for Congress, which, I mean, that's, you're running as a Democrat too, which is like, we got to come clean on this. I never talk about this on the show, but I'm a Republican.
Sure.
And I try to stay away from religion and politics and stuff on the show.
Yeah.
But here we are.
As you
welcome.
Should.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I think, so I am a small business owner. I'm running for U.S. Congress.
Okay.
And I'm running as a Democrat. Those things might seem a little weird to, you know, the onlooker. And I think especially when you interact with the Democratic Party, you start to feel it. You feel that, like, maybe I have a unique voice in the room, right? There's not a lot of business ownership that is represented in that party. But kind of getting back to what you were saying, you know, we don't talk politics, right, in business. A lot of the times we're focused in on our companies.
Yeah, it's kind of taboo, actually, to come to work and talk to your employees about religion and politics. You're just not supposed to do it.
100%.
Yet then you get off to the side with your buddies who are entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
They pretty much are they're very pro-business, and they're less, about a lot of the other issues that the left seems to stand for.
Yeah, and, you know, that's where I come at it, too. I am a small business owner, and so when I look at, the politics of the day, but the issues that we're facing, I look at it through a business owner's mindset. And so I think that, you know, a lot of people, when you go run for office, they start to ask you things like, are you left, right, progressive, conservative, blah, blah, blah. it doesn't, it's helpful to the news, it's helpful to the media, it's helpful to like put a label on someone, but when you actually want to talk about real issues impacting real folks, those labels kind of fall apart, right? Because at the end of the day, we are two guys sitting here running our companies, trying to do what's best for folks.
Okay, so building a small business is really, really difficult. I mean, it's one of the most challenging endeavors, or, you know, a lot 100%. Of small businesses fail or they struggle and there's ups and downs and all that kind of stuff. So I sort of sit here and go, as I was thinking about what I want to do with my life, is like more like build from the inside out.
Yeah.
If I can get, everything's a leadership issue from where I come from. It's 100%. Like, and first I start with myself. I got to get myself right. Then I can begin working on my family and my business and making a living and so on. And then maybe my local community and my friends and business partners and things. But it's really like close to home. And, you know, if how much impact could a guy have talking about, you know, the whole world's talking about national politics or California politics. Why did you decide to venture away from like, you know, you and your, you know, your business and all that, and still try to change the world in such a, I guess, a big way?
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's a cliche, but it's true. Like all politics are local, right? So whether you're talking about the people in the city council, or I believe, you know, like your Congress folks, they need to be focused right here at home, meaning like the district they represent, and really focused on like the issues that the people are experiencing and trying to bring real results back, right? So it's not, we can talk about the big national issues all day, but when you want to get elected or reelected, you got to make real difference for people here at home. So what pushed me to go do this, right? Because it's a crazy thing to do. I have like a nice small business that I work very hard at, and like to step out of that, I'm sure you can imagine a lot of my friends and other business owners are like, what are you doing? This is crazy.
Yeah, why don't you go double size your business instead, man? Double. Don't you want to, you know, make a bunch of money?
That's fair. And so I think, to give a little perspective, you know, I worked at a company that was very successful, the package locker business, right, with Arik. And then after that, I went on to build my small manufacturing company, Powder Coating, like you said. I think I've been very fortunate. I work very hard, and, you know, that gets you a lot of opportunities. But I think luck is a big factor when it comes to being successful in business or in life. But I've done well. But I still have struggled. I think that times have changed from, you know, 2-3 decades ago to where we are now. Things are always progressing. But the struggles that the average person feels are not the same problems from a few decades ago. And so even with my success, and I'd say my fair amount of luck, I've struggled with things like housing, healthcare, you know, work for sure, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I think a lot of us go into small business. But then I look around at my friends in my community, right? And I think that I've experienced struggle and I got lucky and life is still tricky, right? But then I have friends who I'd say are harder working than me, they're smarter than me, and they're definitely better looking, and they're really struggling, right? They can't get ahead in life these days. And so they're like, the wheels start turning in my head. Being a small business owner, how, like, why are people struggling? Why are my friends not as successful as me? Why aren't they getting ahead in life? And so you go start digging through the statistics. You start getting into the weeds. You're like, why are, like, for me, a big thing is housing. Why is housing so damn expensive, right? Or why do small businesses struggle? Or why is healthcare a huge, like, linchpin for all of us that we're really not fixing in this country? And you start to dig into that. And then I love what you said. You go, it all ends up with leadership, right?
It is.
It's all leadership.
It is leadership. And, you know, I hate to be a guy that sits back and throws armchair quarterbacks the way we're going. But
yeah, do
let's
it.
Talk. Okay, so let's talk about why my friends want to either are leaving the state. Even if they have a business here, let's call it an S corp, where it's a pass through, they might go move to another state, and just so they can avoid taxes. So we've got it's like 13.3% taxes
on the state level. Sure.
I'm just talking state taxes. Yeah, yeah. You can move to Nevada. You can move to Incline Village.
Yeah.
And put your residence there and pay zero income tax at the state level.
Yeah.
And it's like Well, why not? Right? If you have the type of business, like if you're starting a business, this is a great place to start a business, right? This has got all kinds of talent.
Yeah.
There's just great things about, there's venture capital, there's all kinds of stuff. But when you start making it and you start throwing off some real income and wealth, it's like, wow, I better figure out where I'm going to live so that I don't have to give it all away to the government.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot in that question, right? One of the things that I think a lot about is where are people actually coming from when they say, like, I don't want to pay so much in taxes, right? And I think a core feeling that comes from that, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, it comes to, like, why is the tax, I'm spending enough taxpayer money, right? Or I'm giving enough money to the government, and what am I getting out of that?
You bet.
Is that a fair?
That's fair. Yeah. That's very fair. I mean, if you were to look at the bigger picture perspective, that's a great point.
Yeah.
And then I also think there's a comparison. When one state is zero and the other state is 13.3%, you're like, well, even if I was getting something out, I'm trying to feed my family still. I'm trying to build, a financial future for my family and maybe expand my empire at some level, whether even if it's a small empire. I want to have growth in my life. And if I've given away all my cash to the government, it's harder to build.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think there's a tax system even in California where we're giving away all of our money to the government. I think that, you know, one thing we learn in business is that if you're paying taxes, that means you're making money, right?
True.
And so, like, if you're not making money, you're not paying taxes as a business owner, right? And so, you know, that's one thing, like, the simple numbers guy teaches, right? He's like, you want to owe taxes at the end of the year. And I think that when you look at it from, like, a civic duty perspective, if California is such a great place, and I would expand to the United States is such a great place to do business in, and you're able to grow that company and make that money, I do think there's a social contract here in which, like, you should be paying taxes back into the thing that's providing for you. And then that's where I go, but we need that tax money to be used effectively.
Fair enough.
Right?
But so I'm going to stay on the taxes point for a second.
Yeah, please.
We can kind of do this because to me, this is one of the biggest issues. So as I look at it, if it's 13.3%, you're not competitive anymore with other states. And so if people are leaving, you can see them leaving. One is because it's high, and there are all these other reasons. Yeah. You're not getting the return that you think, but you are leaving, and it's easy to leave. It's pretty easy to leave for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so we're losing some of the best. So isn't there like a better value, not just the rate, but the overall value, which you're talking about, that we should get back if we're going to pay these kind of taxes, but it's not working.
Yeah.
And I would say part of it's the rate, part of it's what we get for what we pay.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. I feel a slight disconnect in that, like, California is what the fourth, you know, we hear it all the time, it's the fourth largest economy in the world. You and I have built companies here and have been successful, and, like, the tax system hasn't killed me or anything. You know what I mean? Like, I'm doing fine under the current tax system. And so I struggle. I do hear you that there's an optimization argument. There's, like, why would I stay in California when I can go to Nevada and pay lower taxes? But the system we have here in California, it does seem to be working. Right. At least from a,
I think with one of the great things that we have is we've got what's going on in the Silicon Valley and the Bay Area.
Certainly.
So that's the one thing that is really, I guess, special about California, and maybe why leadership in California seems to think that they've got a lot of extra leverage is because these big tech companies are driving such mass, you know, tax.
Yeah.
They're paying a lot of taxes here, and they don't want to leave because of all the talent and so on.
Yeah.
But even when those guys start leaving, now you're like, well, there's a reason they're leaving. We'd rather have them stay and be a part of this thing.
Yeah, yeah. We would rather have them stay. And, like, you know, California, of course, is not just tech. There's, like, the ag, right, is huge. Manufacturing. Mm-hmm. California's a big manufacturer. I got to give the shout out because I got the manufacturing company.
Yes.
But, like, I think all the sectors in California are doing pretty well. I do hear you that anecdotally, you know, the wealthy, if you will say, like, oh, we're going to leave or something like that. But year after year, they don't, right? And California is not raising their taxes year over year. They're relatively staying similar.
Relatively flat and high. They're increasing high. Regulation every year, yes. Which we can get into regulation certainly. Too. But you look yeah. at, didn't Elon Musk move his companies out of here?
Sure.
Didn't, In-N-Out Burger move yeah. their stuff out of here? I mean, yeah. you can. I could ask ChatGP to give me a good list of 100%. All the household names that have left in the last 5 years, and there's going to be a big 100%. List.
I guess what I'm trying to say is even with that movement,
oh, okay.
California is still the fourth largest economy. It's still doing well for the folks, yeah. right?
We've had some tech companies continue to grow. Some other people continue to grow. Yeah.
And leaving, some people will leave. And I do think it gets really into the weeds, but it's about, you know, if people are going to do tax optimization, like where do they want to go and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. Like you always hear the debate of like Texas versus California and taxes, right? But like California has a higher income tax, but Texas will pay more in property taxes, right? And so at the end of the day, state governments need to be funded and they're going to be funded one way or the other. And it's like the method in which they do that. And so if you're a rich, if you are a wealthy business owner, right, you would want to move to a place with maybe that's like making their money off of property tax and not making their money off of business tax. And it's not necessarily that the, you know, you see what I'm saying? It's yes. not necessarily that Texas is better or worse or
Texas
what have you.
Texas got a little bit higher property taxes than we do, yeah.
They're just doing it. They're getting their money in different ways. And so if you make all your money in one way, you should go to the state that doesn't tax that one thing, right? And so, like, I think that's a bit of the shell game that's being played. Yeah. But I do, like, one thing I just got to say is, like, I love when we're in the circle of business owners, you know, it's like, it's so hard to build a business in California. And it is, right? 100% is. But I think the thing that gets lost in that comment when we all laugh about it, we're like, it's so hard. We're all the survivors. Like yeah. when I'm in a room like of EO and I'm in a room with like 20 business owners and we're like, it's so hard to build a business in California. Taxes here suck. We're the beneficiaries, though. There, like you said, there's 99% more business owners that failed, right? That have a real gripe with maybe the California business environment.
Well, I can see if you're, now, are most of your customers local?
Yeah, I'd say like 200 miles B2B.
Okay, so yeah, you have customers here. But what if you've got a company that's done well and you're doing business all over the country or all over the world?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I started it here. And now it's blown up. Now we're doing business worldwide.
Yeah,
only
yeah.
Like I got a company that you know, we're only doing like 1% of our company or 1% of our business here in the Sacramento region. But
totally fair.
You know, I don't really need to be in Sacramento. But I love, so here's just, you know, so I don't sound like I'm I've been promoting Sacramento for 10 years on my show. So if you're a first time listener, then I want to set the perspective that I get a chance to at least give a little bit of perspective because I do promote Sacramento a lot continually for the last several years. And I love my hometown. And I live more in the Placer County area yeah. and I grew up here and I'll never leave because I'm one of those guys that says, hey, let me just, you know, work on from the inside out. I'm not going to try to escape what we've got going here.
Yeah.
Maybe I can do something to fix it, starting with my family, friends, entrepreneurship and Sacramento specifically, or even Loomis, Sacramento, or excuse me, Roseville specifically. But yeah. I look at this, but I've got family, I've got roots here. Not everybody's really rooted here like I am.
Yeah. Can I want to challenge you a little bit.
Yeah.
Like when you think about like what you just said, right? Because, and I think that's the great thing of a conversation like this. We both love Sacramento. We're both
yes.
like California guys. And like, we've built something here that we're really proud of. And I guess like when you think of your headspace and where you're at, and you would never leave Sacramento and you want to build it up and put back into the market, into the neighborhood, right? Why does that philosophy not continue on to like an Elon Musk or what have you? Just because he wasn't born in the area? Like
why does he feel different, are you saying?
Yeah, yeah. Like why, what is different? I guess what I would love to investigate like generally is what's different about you and the other, like it doesn't have to be Elon, just other business owners that will go and move to Nevada for the cheaper taxes or what have you. Like what separates you?
I would say pride in my my community.
Yeah.
I grew up here. You know, I'm still proud of the high school I went to.
Yeah.
I'm just that type of person. I'm old school in that way. I've still got friends that, you know, retired from UPS, and they, you know, we go hang out, stuff like that. Yeah, we're all buddies. So I don't want to lose that. And to me, that's more important than the what I've got to pay in taxes. So I'm prioritizing.
Yeah.
But some people aren't as rooted as what, like Musk maybe wasn't as rooted as what I am.
100%.
And maybe doesn't have those deeper, you know, entrenched, you know, perspectives.
Yeah. I do. I, you know, like not to get too academic about it, but I was reading about like the golden age, right? The old, you know, the oil barons and the train tycoons and stuff like that, and what they used to do, right? So when you think about what they did with their wealth towards the end of their lives, they started building things. They built libraries, concert halls, hospitals. They started schools, right? They started pouring their money back into the communities that benefited them. And I do think that what you're touching on is like there's a new perspective. There's a new type of citizen, if you will, in the United States that is not as tied down to their roots, right? Like Bezos does not feel a commitment to Seattle, I guess.
Apparently not,
yeah. Right? Or like Elon doesn't feel a commitment to San Francisco quite like, you know, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies or whatever.
But the Carnegies built, there's Carnegie Library in Roseville, right?
Oh, they built them everywhere.
They went and helped communities all over the place. So there are a lot of those super wealthy people that have built things that are national and worldwide.
Yeah, I just mean that, like, I think that they felt a great sense of nationalism, like a sense of pride. And some of them, they all acted differently. Some of them did, like, they built it in New York, right? Like, right, how big is their bubble or sphere of influence? And some of them did, you know, maybe they felt an allegiance to the country at large and built all over the place.
Are people more proud of California or more proud of the United States of America?
That's a tough question.
I mean, you go walk into my backyard, I've got three flags up. One is the United States of America, one is the Marine Corps flag, and the other is law enforcement flag, which gives a little bit of my perspective on what I'm proud of and what I believe in.
Yeah.
I don't have that bear flag up there.
Okay.
I don't, and it's not because I'm not proud of California. It's just like in ranking where I come from, it's more like, you know, I'm American.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think, you know, going back to your original point, that's where we need to come from, is that we all are American, like Republican, Democrat. I know I'm the politician on, you know, the microphone right now. That doesn't matter. When I go talk to the news, they put you through that lens. But when I go talk to a guy who's trying to buy a house or a young woman who's trying to start a business, this like Republican, Democrat, whatever, it doesn't matter anymore because they just need to provide for their families. But I will say, like, I'm an American, right?
If you had one flag to put up in front of your house, would it be a state of California or a United States or something else?
What I'll say is, like, in my shop floor of my company, I have a big American flag and I do have a Californian flag.
Good for you.
I put the bear up.
Hey, good. I'm not like anti-California. I just think we've got some leadership issues. But
yeah, that's fair.
I love California. I mean, it's a great place to live, and I love the Sacramento region, even though I feel like Sacramento, where you live, has fallen on, they've got a few challenges that we don't necessarily have in Placer County.
Sure.
So,
go ahead. That's what drives me, is that I hear you. And I think you're right that we do have leadership challenges. For instance, like I know, not getting too political, the race I'm in, I'm running against a Democrat, right?
Okay.
So it's Dem on Dem fighting going on. And that's because, like, I agree. I think that we do have some real issues. And I see
you live in Midtown, right?
Downtown, Sacramento.
Okay, so can we bring up who you're?
The incumbent is a woman. Her name's Doris Matsui.
I think everybody's heard of her.
Everybody's heard of her. She's 80 years old.
She and her husband have been holding down that spot for, you know, since I was a kid.
She has been in office for 20 years. Okay. Her husband held it before her for 20 years. So it's about a 40-year long Matsui seat.
How do you beat? Okay, so I'm jumping around a little bit. So, how are you going to beat those guys?
Come
on. It's like,
I think at the end of the day, the argument needs to be made and someone needs to try. Mm-hmm. So for the last, honestly, you know, the last 20 years, and this is a big issue that I feel in like my bones is no one really tried to make any argument against her. It was just business as usual. This is her seat and no one can challenge that. And then now when you pull it into a business owner's perspective, that's bad, right? Like if you are hiring someone or you're putting a CEO in charge of your company or you're hiring a director of sales or whatever, like you don't just go, oh yeah, you know, I know that our like director of sales, I know our sales have been terrible for the last 10 years, but I know Jim, he's always held that position and I'm going to let him keep it.
It seems like common sense. There should be a little competitiveness. I mean, that seems like common sense to get the better candidate. Why hasn't there been? It's like these guys just stay there forever. Once they get their, I guess, donor base up, you can't beat them.
Yeah, I think it's donor base. I think it's party. It's on the left and the right, right? Okay. Like we see Congress itself is like the oldest it's ever been. Right.
Are you talking about at the national level?
Yeah, it's the U.S. Okay. Congress, mm-hmm. the Congress folk are at like the oldest average age they've ever been. And I really do think it's a little bit of I'm sure there's a healthy bit of ego in it, but I think there's also like politics in it, in that, you know, trying to hold on to power, protect mm-hmm. your own and so on and so forth. But that is,
I can see why they would want to stay, but why isn't anybody beating them if they're better?
Why doesn't anyone try? I would love to know the answer to that question. I think a lot of it is, you know, one difference I see in the Democrats and the Republicans, at least, and I'm speaking on a local level because I'm a business owner. I walked into politics, right? And what has been my experience so far? I think that Democrats generally value experience in politics. And so what I mean by that is they view Congress as it's a ladder you climb, right? So you go, Mark, you want to go be in politics? You know, we're going to put you on the water board, the air resources board. Okay. And then, you know, in a couple of years, we'll see if you can get city council. And then maybe 5 years after that, you can run for the state. And then after 10 years in the state, you can run for Congress. That's like generally how the political machine operates a little bit. But I think hopefully maybe the wheels are turning your head a little bit and going like, that can't be a good methodology. And the reason for that is you end up with one type of person with one perspective, someone who's like walked through the political machine.
Okay. Can I throw a more like a question, potential argument that? Because when I have a number of friends that are in local politics in the maybe I'm kind of stuck here in Placer County, but they're I don't hear all this left right type of talking when we're talking about, you know, these smaller towns or like Rockland or Roseville, even you know, even Placer County. I don't hear the big left and right debate. It's like, okay, well, where do we want to have a, you know, it's more like localized stuff versus the party line, if you will. So moving up through, you have plenty of small business owners that are you know, on the city council for the city of Roseville. It's a lot of business people. They would end up being, if they were to just go up through, then they run into, I would think it'd be a brick wall if they wanted to become, you know, governor or, you know, run for Congress.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, well, everywhere is different. So Sacramento doesn't look like that.
Okay.
When you look at Sacramento electeds, not a lot of business owner representation. It's a different.
I'm in my own little, I'm kind of sheltered.
But I think it's, you're still talking somewhat similar in that you're saying like those people that are business owners, they get into elected office, they would hit a wall, right? And they couldn't go for like the Congress or governor or whatever.
I'm assuming that because otherwise, why wouldn't they?
You know? Well, I think that one, everyone has different motivations for stuff. Like what issues, at the end of the day, politics is like deeply personal, right? It's like, what issues speak to you? What do you want to go solve for? Right. And so, you know, I can't speak for everyone. It depends on, you know, if your local city council person wants to solve local city council issues, they shouldn't run for Congress. Right.
That's could it be, I'm not one of those people, but could it be that I can't make a difference because I'm right wing, right-leaning thinking, maybe I'm business-oriented thinking, or maybe I would be a Republican or an independent or yeah. something like that. And it's breaking through and making any kind of impact. I'm just like that. I happen to come from this little pocket where I can, you know, you can be a Republican if you live in Placer County, but basically your vote doesn't matter that much.
Okay. Yeah. I get that. Yeah. I think that there is, like I said, you know, people put labels on things, and those labels can cause struggles in elections and stuff like that. Okay. Right.
Labels like Republican, Democrat.
Republican, Democrat. Okay. Right. And that's why I got to say, you know, when I go on the campaign trail, when I go talk to normal folks and stuff like that, I don't lead with Republican or Democrat. That's not what I talk about.
Okay.
When I go out and talk to normal folks, I go like, hey, we have a housing problem that we need to solve. And nowhere in that am I go, and this is Democrat or this is Republican. It's like, no, these are American issues. You know, we have real problems in this country, and we need leaders who are going to go out and solve those. And so that's where, like, I struggle with a 20-year incumbent. Because think of what has happened in those 20 years. Like, it's been so long since that person has had, like, to face the reality of what it's like to be a normal American. Like, mm-hmm. when was the last time they went and bought a house? When was the last time, you know, they worked a job or started a company or had to go get healthcare? You can read memos about these things, but it's not the same as, like, feeling it in your bones, living it, right? Like, knowing the experience and understanding, grasping the issue and trying to solve it. It's just like in our companies, right? Like, at the end of the day, if you want to solve an issue in your company, I bet you rolled up your sleeves, got in there, understood the problem, and tried to tackle it.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You didn't have someone, like, write you a report, you read a memo on it, and you go, okay, well, let me think about this for 5 years and I'll get back to you.
How much do the lobbyists and all this special interest money affect how people vote and ultimately affect the philosophies there in the state?
Yeah. Too much, right? To be honest with you, I would say any amount is too much. So it's an easy answer for me, but we want people, I think, or I'll speak for myself. I want elected leaders who understand me, right? Not that are going for, you know, pick your boogeyman, right? Big oil or whatever the heck the thing is that you don't like.
I don't think big oil did well in California.
No. But you know what I mean? Like, I think special interest and political money coming from those places, it only serves to distance the leader or the elected from the people, which is who I think we should be representing. And so I think the pendulum has swung pretty far in this country. I think that special interests control a lot of things. But I would say any amount is too much, and we should be railing against that. Because I don't care if you're, you know, a barista or a doctor or a small business owner. Like, you want your elected representative to know you and to be able to fight for what's best for you, not be thinking about, you know, who gave me the last donation or what have you. It's just like in our companies, right? We want to make the best decision for our business at the time. And if there were, like, all these other factors that were swaying us to do things that weren't benefiting our business, that would be really bad, right? We'd be trying to cut those out of our lives pretty fast, I think.
For sure.
And, like, politics is the exact same, I think, as small business. Business in general. There's incentives, there's motivating factors, and we got to look at, like, what those are, what is influencing the leaders, and try to get people in there that have our best interest at
heart.
Well,
I appreciate that you're running. You're a common sense guy. I look at this as, you know, there is a pendulum, and
yeah.
we are a potential turnaround story in California. I think California has got needs a turnaround, and with that is going to mean probably some amount of pain and disruption when there's any turnaround. So how close are we to something like that? Obviously, there's a governor's race this year.
There is, yeah.
And, but it looks like the The Democrats have a chance of losing that that spot. We've got a
couple they're having fun.
Yeah, we've got a couple of Republicans that are, I guess, the some of the front runners now. So I don't know how much impact. How does that work? How much impact if one of these Republicans was to win governor?
Yeah.
And in the Congress and the rest of the legislation in California kind of stayed the same. Can that person have, how much impact can they have?
Yeah, a governor is impactful, certainly. So, like, they hold an important role and have a lot of sway on what's going on, right? When I look at that race, I think about, we are in, it's such a cliche, but we are in an important moment. Like, I think nationally, at the state level, at the local level, I view things as changing rapidly, right? And you don't have to look far to find it.
I totally agree.
AI, right? I would argue that, like, housing is a huge issue, healthcare. We're going through a seismic shift, right? Even when you look at the Congress, right? Congress is incredibly old, stuck in old ways. And I do think that the time is coming where things have to change because they're starting to break pretty badly when you look. And so that for me excites me because when things break, it gives you an opportunity to do something new with it. And I would say that when I look at the Democratic Party or people in leadership, what have you, we have a real opportunity to reshape what that means to the normal person. Mm-hmm. I think that the Democratic Party needs to become the party that builds, right? I think that for a very long time, and it's even a through line in this conversation, Democrats have held power, certainly here at the state level, but even in the national level over my lifetime, the Democrats have had power. And as Robbie the voter, the Democratic voter, the frustration I got is when Democrats had power, they've been pretty ineffective at like achieving real results. And that means that if you're paying taxes, you go, what the heck am I paying for? We, you know, these Democrats are in power and they've done nothing with it. And so one thing that excites me about that seismic shift that's occurring is that we can put new leaders in, something that I want to go out and do, and be a leader who actually builds, who delivers, right? Who's going to take that, take what's existing and try to be efficient with it and to actually produce real results that help folks.
Okay, so let me just maybe kind of go down a list of, I'm kind of jumping around on you.
Yeah.
I appreciate you sort of bearing with me as I just start
I'm with you.
Doing this, but like, it seems to me that you and I would see eye to eye on a lot of things, and I lean toward the right,
yeah.
You lean toward the left. Where do we agree? Where would you assume that we agree? Maybe we can go down a list of those topics, and where might we disagree? And so we kind of know, like, okay, where would you and I vary in how we might think?
Well, here's one thing that I think, and we can test it. I hope that we can agree on what the issue is. This is what I thought politics was. What the old, like, I do think that, not to throw the butt, but like with Trump and MAGA and all that, the lines have shifted a little bit. I remember when I was younger, you know, Republican and Democrat, I felt like had maybe similar goals, but different. They argued about the methods in which we'd achieve it. And that's how I think about.
Okay, fair enough.
So that's how I think about politics today. So I think hopefully we can agree on that there is an issue that should be addressed. And then the question becomes, and this is where I think we would disagree, maybe, is what method should we do to solve it? So like, a case in point for me, I say it all the time. It's the thing that drives me crazy. Housing. I think housing is incredibly important, right? I think that if we pulled out fact sheets, I could show you a housing problem if you don't know it exists already, right? Like
now, you're pointing out where we would agree now.
Maybe you tell me.
Okay,
but if you don't agree with me, let me throw a fact at you.
Okay.
One thing that drives me nuts, I say it anytime a microphone goes in front of my face, someone will make a video of me saying this constantly. The National Association of Realtors, they put out a report every year that tracks the average age of a first-time home buyer. Okay. When I was born in the 90s, it was 28 years old. Today, it's 42 years old. I think about this from a small business perspective. Think about a level 10, the KPIs, the scorecard. Yeah. Yeah. That's a huge scorecard. That's a really important scorecard. How, at what age are people able to access home ownership?
Right. So when I bought my first house, I think I was 21, 22. And
amazing.
One thing that anybody listening, I do think that there's a compounding effect with beginning to invest when younger, and then it compounds. And yes. Real estate's a good example of that, you know, for any of us. But it also roots us to our community. When you buy a house, you like feel, you know, you vote for the local politician.
Yeah.
You go to the parks.
It matters
you
feel, a lot.
You go to schools. Yeah. Your kids grew up there, and your town matters to you where you buy. You're more portable. If you're just renting, you could go anywhere. It's a lot easier to just pick up and bounce.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I have not accessed home ownership in my life, even though I've done well for myself. You know, in my life, I decided to go open a business instead of buying a home. I'm still pretty rooted here for sure. But I agree with you. I think that once you own a home, you're going to care about, you know, what's the water quality like, you know, what schools are going in around
and
you.
And when I was a kid, that was part of the American dream. It was part of the American dream is, you know, you can go to a place and own your own home and have some freedom.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, 100%. This is what fires me up. So with the average age of a first-time home buyer increasing so much over the last few decades, right? That means that younger and younger people aren't able to access home ownership. And by that nature, I think that they are losing their belief in the American dream. Mm-hmm. I think there's that implied promise of like, put your head down, work hard, go to school, buy a home, start a family. And what I want to say to as many people as I can is that buy a home thing, it's not available anymore for young people. And imagine what that does on a psychological level. Like, what's that do to people's psyche? What's that do to people's belief in the country or the state or the city they're in, right? It's like, I'm trying to put roots down. I want to put roots down. I want to live here. I want to work here, contribute, but I'm not able to access.
I don't disagree with that. It's got to do that, even though I'm not living amongst the 28-year-olds as much,
even though
I have kids.
Yeah.
And I see, you know, I'm not in the dark, but I hear that repeatedly. But why is it tougher to buy a home?
Yes.
That's an interesting question.
Okay, so there's a million reasons, but if I could simplify it, I think, going back to business, I think we have a supply and demand issue. I think that over the last 4 or 5 decades, we haven't built homes at the rate at which we were creating households. The amount of people that want to buy homes is far higher than the homes we have in the state of California. It's happening across the country too. This is not a uniquely California problem, but you know, who cares about them? I'm here in California. These, like the Sacramento region, that's what I want to fix, right? That's where I focus. But we feel it acutely here. And so it's simple. Like, if there's more people trying to buy homes than there are, prices go up. When prices go up at a rate that's far higher than the rate of wage increase or what have you, you end up with an affordability issue. You end up with a bunch of young folks who are working just as hard as, you know, you did when you were growing up, but yet the ratio is off.
How much in the building of a house, if we haven't built enough houses, and there is demand, what is driving the price of these houses up so high? That's an interesting question, because I've built houses and there is a ton of local red tape, state red tape, federal red tape. I mean, I would say just in spending on consulting fees for the last little group of houses I built, I mean, I spent a million plus just trying to get through the red tape, the bureaucracy of the government.
Yes.
And it's at the local, state, and federal.
Yes, 100%.
So, I mean, that drives up the price of houses.
Yeah, and that's one thing where, like, being a small business owner but a Democrat, I break with the party, right?
Okay.
Like, I think that generally the party, Democrats generally want to protect government, right? They say, like, hey, we put in this law, it's a good law, and we're going to defend it till we die. And that's a terrible philosophy, right? Think about in small business, you got to try something, see if it works. If it doesn't work, you go back and fix it. Democrats in this state haven't done that. They've held on to laws for too long, regulation that is inhibiting the thing that they believe. And so, like, being a new type of Democrat, I believe that we need more housing. And so if I was elected, I would be putting in laws to try to reduce the burden of building homes, right?
Okay.
Maybe not something you hear from Democrats.
I agree. So would that be reduced regulation?
Yeah.
And then what else would you do to reduce the burden of a home?
So I think that let me give a solid example where I think Democrats go wrong. I'm trying to play to your audience. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, Democrats go there's not enough people getting homes. Young people can't access homes. The houses are too expensive, and they sit around and they think and they go, how are we going to solve that? They go, down payment assistance. Yeah. They go
subsidize.
We're going to give
my tax dollars and help the guys that can't do it.
Yeah,
I get it.
Which, like, maybe philosophically that might be an issue, but I think there's a bigger problem is that I've proposed here that there's more buyers than there are sellers of homes, and that's driving up the price. And so the Democratic solution to down payer assistance is going to do what?
Create more demand.
Create a bunch more demand. And so then you're going to go into a death spiral. You're going to create more home buyers, but you're not increasing the supply. Housing prices are going to keep going up higher. And then what, in like 5 years, we're going to go, oh, we need to increase the subsidy.
You even hear that from some Republicans at the national level. So it's not like
it's a death spiral.
Everybody gets this basic thing, but
we push it, like the left pushes it. And so that's one thing, you know, I think just coming from a small business owner perspective, okay, what should we do? Well, we should increase the supply. And so there's a million things you can do to increase the supply. Like one of the things that I propose is that we should create a public bank. So this is using big government,
okay,
to offer out below market rate loans to home builders. And so I want to influence the market to solve the problem for me.
Oh, interesting.
Because I don't think the government, like if I believe that we have a supply problem, I want to go build homes. But I don't think the government should build homes. And so instead, what I want to do is influence the market to want to build homes. And so you go, okay, well, what's holding up the market? There's regulation, red tape, certainly. But I also think let's get economic incentives on the building side. Let's make it kind of like your tax argument. Let's make it more attractive to build a home in California than anywhere else in the country.
Okay, what about you? I think you've probably heard this saying before.
Yeah.
It comes from Ronald Reagan. I'm here from the government. I'm from the government. I'm here to help, right? That kind of thing. So what about just getting the government less out of our lives?
Yeah.
So that it, you know, there's just more of a clean slate. You're talking about a new government program to create a bank. And I'm not like saying that's the worst idea world. I'm more like, what about just getting the government a little bit less out of our lives and letting the free market figure out how to make all that work versus trying to get in there and manipulate all this stuff?
Yeah, that's fair. And I think now, I love it. Now we're getting to a more core, like Democrat Republican ideology issue. I believe that there are there's good solutions for good problems. So like take what you do, like the Allegiant Vet stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I think that a nonprofit is the best at solving that problem, right? You're trying to get an individual, I don't want to put words in what you guys do, but I love your guys' mission, but like you're helping on an individual level veterans get jobs, right? I don't think the US government is the best at doing that. I think a nonprofit is really good at doing that because of the scale of the issue. But if you wanted to fight a war, I don't think your nonprofit should do that.
I
think the U.S. government should do it.
I think if you talk about national security or even local security and, you know, some basics of safety and security, I'm all about the government being running the show there, you know, being the overarching authority in that realm.
Yeah.
But a lot of the other stuff, I don't know.
But I want to get to the principle of why, because the principle of why I want the national government providing security is because it's a huge collective action problem. It requires so much funding and it requires all of us to pull together for a common good for all of us that I think the federal government is the right thing to do. Like, and that is, that's core Democratic politics, is that there's, once a problem gets to such a scale, I believe you need a collective solution. You need a huge solution to a huge problem is like the simple way of what I'm saying. Housing for me is that. Like, I think that because of the scale of the issue, because it's gone from 28 years old to 42 years old, because in California, we're 2.5 million homes short of where we need to be. That's not even the country. That's just California. California only has 14 million homes to give you the sense of the scale. I would argue that that's a crisis. When our young people don't believe in the American dream, that's a crisis to me that I think requires big solution. And so I hear you that we could try to just exit. We could step out and say, you know, we're just going to make it easy and, you know, laissez-faire and step out. But I think that we should, when faced with big problems, put big solutions behind them.
Okay, so one of our big crises is the housing problem.
Yes.
What about education?
Education.
Where does that rank as compared to housing?
I don't know where it ranks. Education is incredibly important. The same issue. It's the same issue, Mark. It drives me nuts. Like, okay, so we felt that education was getting too expensive, and we go, we want more people to access higher education. And so what do? We federally backed student loans, right? And in the Democrats' minds, they go like, that's a great idea, because now people get access to loans, they can buy college. But I think the alarm bells are going off for you. They were going off for me. If you gave all my clients in my company federally backed loans to buy my products, I'm going to start raising price, you know?
Yes.
And that's exactly what we saw.
So yeah, the price of an education has gone way up.
Education has not gotten that much better over the last 50 years. Like, I'm sorry. I think that, you know, sitting in a college class with a great professor teaching you some amazing stuff is about the same as it was in the 80s or 90s. Maybe the subject matter is different or something, but education is not that much better. But the price of education has gone up like 1,500% or something like that. And it's the same thing. It's supply and demand. It's like, if you want education to be cheaper and accessible, you got to provide more of it so that the market takes care of it and brings prices down. But if you don't build more facilities, if you don't increase the amount of universities, and instead you federally back every 18-year-old to purchase a service at any price you want because it's federally backed, education prices are going to skyrocket.
Okay, so do you have some big government program that's going to fix this, or do you have a more simple solution, like maybe get the government, like my solution would be quit doing that?
Yeah. So, well, I definitely think we should quit doing that. I think that we should not federally back student loans. I think that that's just us shooting ourselves in the foot. We're paying a lot of money for not a lot of benefit. This is where we'll disagree.
Okay, good.
I think that I would make high-end education, upper universities and stuff like that, I would make it free. I would.
Okay.
I think
Who would pay all the expenses?
We would pay it.
We is taxes? We
Americans would pay for it. Yeah.
We might disagree.
We would disagree on that. I would argue that education is like the number one way to lift yourself out of poverty. I think it's one.
I was going to say you should run for as a Republican, but now I'm going to pull it back.
Yeah, see, that's how it goes. Like, people feel that about me on the surface, but there's some core differences when you get into it. But like, yeah,
I think we
already pay for a lot of it.
But we pay for it. What if the individual had to pay for it?
The individual does pay for it right now.
The individual borrows the money and pays for it. But what if that the backing was not, you know, the federal loans didn't exist?
Yeah. Well,
and if then you did nothing.
The problem is if you don't federally back it, right? I don't know about you. I wouldn't give a loan to an 18-year-old to go get a college degree. And so I think that they'll get the reason why I would say that the government should make higher education free is because I don't know how to get out of the quagmire that we're in now.
Wouldn't that force a market change where the universities, we're talking about the colleges and universities now, they would lower their prices or go out of business?
God, I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, they would lower the prices, go out of business, which they've built these massive campuses and they're enormous.
Yeah.
And the strong would survive and it would be almost like a free market.
Yeah, but you would have less universities all of a sudden.
Okay.
And that's like kind of moving in the wrong direction. I think it's hard for young people to get into university as is. Limiting the number, like letting the free market kill some universities and allow the strong to survive, I think would be moving in the wrong direction. Okay. And I want our people educated, right? And I want people to have access to that education. It goes, and this is where I think we might disagree. I struggle to understand why education wouldn't be as important as national defense. Like, why would educating our young people not be so vitally important? Because it is to high school, And then we just go, eh,
I can see from a long-term standpoint, we need to educate our young people. I don't know that college, I think as the world changes and the access to information has increased, I don't know that these billion-dollar campuses necessarily serve the same. They're not quite as needed maybe as they will, maybe they were in the past. And I think moving forward, we might kind of see that change. But from a nationalist defense standpoint, I mean, if we didn't have that, we might be in jeopardy today.
Immediately.
Yeah. There's immediate. And I also think, I think that it has to rank up there in terms of education, but it's hard to think about how to put it above national security.
I wouldn't put it above. It's never, like, for me, it's not about the ranking. It's more just about the philosophy, what do I think the country should be like? And I hear you. Yes, national defense, we have an issue today, right? Yeah. If we can't defend ourselves. If we don't educate ourselves, we got a problem coming up, you know?
For sure.
And the long term is just as important, right? When you look at our test scores on national rankings and stuff like that, we're starting to get our butts kicked. And, but at the end of the day, I almost don't get that far into the argument. I start with what are we doing today? Is it working? It's not. The education system's not working today. We're putting our young people in massive amounts of debt, and we're doing it through market forces that I think are pretty foolish, because we're putting them in debt in service to profits for universities. If we're going to put young people in debt, it at least should help them, not just rich universities or what have you. So I stop there. I go, how do we fix that problem, right? And this is where I don't know how to unwind the clock of where we're at right now without the government providing higher education. It's with our tax dollars, but we're already paying for it. We're already backing these student loans. And I think it's vitally important that we continue to educate our young people.
Okay.
And it's what I haven't heard another solution from any of our lawmakers of how do you get out of that quagmire in any other way? Because if I tomorrow, I said, stop federally backing student loans, I think we should, we end up with a bunch of issues we need to solve very, very fast, right? And it's great. Well, let's come up with those solutions. And so that's where I end up with higher education.
And the younger kids, I mean, I have this philosophy, all great change. It's another Ronald Reagan quote. All great change in America begins at the dinner table. All the philosophies that we talk about at our home, at the dinner table, or maybe on the way to school, the way to football practice, these are the things that really shape our young people. And then we send them to school.
Yeah.
How about our youth? What about the things that happen at the youth level? How important is a legislature in helping shape some of that stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's weird. I feel like I'm the Republican. I think we've shifted some degree. I think we're getting a little too deep into educational systems. I think we should maybe set some baseline standards or what have you. But I'm not a teacher. I'm not an educator. And so at a legislative level, I don't want to tell schools what they should be teaching. Mm-hmm. If that's what your question is.
Yeah, I'm kind of going to the Democrats generally. They control a lot of the unions and the teachers union and so on. And
sure.
So that affects how our kids get educated. And they're a part of the lobbying that pays for who gets voted in. And they want the Democrats.
Yeah, that's fair. I think at the end of the day, if I think about who, Robbie, if I was in office, how would I act, right? I think that there's some deference to expertise that we lose sometimes, And so in the places where I'm a powerhouse, I know what's going on. If a bill comes across my desk, if I'm looking at voting on a certain bill and it's about small business or, living in Sacramento or something like that, I'll take it, right? When something comes across the desk that's about a place I don't have as much expertise, you got to go talk to the folks that are actually doing the work, the ground truth, right? And it's let's go figure out what do teachers need to be supported and to teach our youth properly. Where are they struggling? That's where I think a legislature should be. Sometimes our lawmakers, I think they think too big of themselves and they go off on all these tangents about, all sorts of topics. And it's like, wait, aren't you like a plumber? Like, what, you know, one thing, you're just, you're a representative, right? And so represent the things you know really well, and the things you don't, go talk to some folks.
And I think that's why I haven't got into politics too, is because I'm a small business guy. Yeah, so I'm focusing on what I know. And so I try not to go down those paths, especially with people who are, you know, in the middle of these other issues. And I do want to defer to them as much as I can, so 100%. We can all work in our own way. But it just seems to me that because it's not working, and our tax dollars are going somewhere, and I just see the budgets and so on, whether it be the state or the federal, it's like we're not managing it very well from a financial standpoint, and a lot of the outcomes in terms of what we invest into, in terms of the infrastructure and the roads and all that, that's not that great.
That's why we need new politicians. If you like, that's my frustration.
Generally shrink it, and we wouldn't have as much.
That's fair. But I also think, like, let's get people in with different perspectives, with new ideas that are going to try to put their mark on the government, right? If we keep electing the same people for the last 20 years and then you expect different results, you're crazy, right? You are going to get the same result. And so, like, I think in my election, you know, the one thing I talk to voters about, I'm like, if you're happy, if everything's going amazing for you, don't vote for me. Right? Because I'm going to go in with a different perspective and try to change things. And it's like, I 100% agree with you. If the government is spending the money improperly, if we're not being as efficient as we need to be, if we're not building where we need to be building, get new people at the table who have that perspective. Because when I wake up in the morning, I have to go solve a problem. Like, otherwise I'm going to go nuts. And like, let's get those people in office. And then if I do good for a few years and I stop, vote my ass out. Take me out.
All right. Well, I'm way past my time here. So to me, this is a really interesting topic, and maybe, you know, it's fun to talk politics with somebody that's not trying to win the argument. You know, you get in and talk with people who are on the left, it's like trying to win the argument and all the talking points and so on. Can I just kind of share my perspective and you share yours, and versus trying to win the argument? Yeah. So thank you for that. I'm a uniter, not a divider. And I don't think I'm right on everything. And I understand that I've got a lot to learn, but I think some of my perspective is not necessarily wrong. It's worked for building businesses. I don't think
100%.
You know, America was built on on capitalism.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, you know, some of that stuff works. So why don't we try to use that methodology for the most part in how we grow grow our way out of this thing versus, I guess, spend our way out of it.
Yeah. So I'm with you.
And if we have the money in our pockets as individuals and as businesses, then we'll figure out a way to grow our way out of it. That's my mentality.
Absolutely. I appreciate.
I'll give you a last word.
No. I appreciate the conversation. For me, it's exciting to be able to get out and talk with everyday folks, right? It's like the people that are working everyday jobs. It's small business owners. It's some of the political folks. I think at the end of the day, getting people together to problem solve is what excites me. And I think that's what, you know, we have an opportunity to do every day. And so, you know, I'm glad that you took the time to engage in the conversation.
Well, it's great to hear just a common sense human business person running for Congress. I hope you win. I mean, I don't know what your chances really are.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be realistic about it. It's you're probably an underdog, but that's how entrepreneurship is, right?
Yeah, the running for political office feels a lot like starting a company. You don't really know what you're doing. You're going in every day trying to figure it out. And I think at the end of the day, the fun is in the fight. Like, it's about trying your best, making the best argument you can, and maybe people resonate, maybe they don't, but as long as, you know, you said your truth and tried to do what's best for the people in your neighborhood, I think that's what I'm proud of.
I love it. I appreciate it. Robbie Moran, you're the owner of a manufacturing company, so you're a real world entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You're running as a Democrat.
As a Democrat.
I still love you. Good luck to you, man.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming in.
Of course.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, at Mark Haney Show, and The Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.